Mike Hicks will join us in just a few minutes. And he's actually on the line right now. He's a Carolina boy himself. He lives up in Mebane. Hicksy, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Johnny. How are you, buddy?
You know, of all the things you and I have ever talked about, we've never really talked about that Sunday afternoon back in 1999.
No, you're right. We haven't.
I mean, the images are so indelible, I think, for lots and lots of reasons. You know, what when people ask you about it, what's the first thing that springs to mind?
Well, I tell you, the first thing that really stands out in my mind is, you know, here's a guy that's kind of at the end of his career. I wouldn't say the end of his career, but as far as competing in major tournaments, obviously his time was limited. We didn't know how limited it was, but at the time. But you know, all the young guns were right there that week. You had Duval, number one in the world, he was right there. Tiger, Phil, Vijay, all the young guns back in the late 90s, they were all right there, and the semi-old guy got them. And so, that's really what I think about is the fact that he beat, at that time, you know, the guys that were considered, you know, the best in the world. So.
Well, it wasn't like he was having a bad year. You guys won Pebble Beach earlier that year.
Right.
I remember it vividly because you putted out on 18 at Spyglass, which was your last hole.
Right.
What turned out to be your last hole of the tournament, and I was actually on 9 green.
Yep.
The exact same time. What I remember about that year and what I learned about the game from that year was that Payne Stewart led the PGA Tour in scrambling that year.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's how you win golf tournaments, against David Duval and Tiger Woods and the likes. There's no place that you have to do more of that than right here. We all remember the putts on 16 and 18. What was the flavor like for the week around the greens?
Well, you know, we went around there. Actually, he went around there Saturday before the tournament. We had missed the cut in Memphis. And as it turned out, it was a blessing in disguise because they didn't finish that tournament till Monday, if I recall correctly. And we got there. He got there Saturday. I flew right home on Friday after we missed. And I went down, walked the course Saturday. He came in Saturday afternoon. And Payne never carried a yardage book, ever. And that was the only week he ever carried a yardage book. And he went around that Saturday afternoon with his wedges and his putter. He walked around with Chuck Cook, his teacher, and he marked in red a Sharpie. He took a red Sharpie and he marked around the greens where you did not want to hit the ball. And in 72 holes, we hit the ball in one of those areas once, and that was on the second hole on Sunday. And he had to make a 5-footer for bogey. So if that tells you anything, I mean, but that was the only time the whole week that he hit it in one of those red areas. So
where was that, right?
He played the course that week, you know, as precise and as good as you could play it, without question.
Was that right on two? I have to know.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Short and right on two. Not a good spot.
No, and he's, you know, He was known, much like, you know, Freddie, as just sort of, you know, work hard, fight hard, play hard, but then leave it at the golf course. I mean, that was sort of the way that the golf world viewed Payne. You're saying that there was more here. There was something about this week that you knew was different right from the get go.
Yeah, you know, he had a sense. I think it really dated back to '98 when we lost to Jansen. He got done with that week, and he proved to himself that he could still, you know, get there in a major championship, still get there, still contend, and have a shot. And, you know, we got to that tournament in 99. We got to the Open in 99, and he just had a sense of peace about him. And, you know, he actually chewed me out a little bit. We played a practice round on Sunday, and I met him there in the clubhouse, and first thing he said to me, he says, you know, you didn't do a very good job last week. And I said, I really wasn't. I was kind of thinking about this week. And he looked at me, he said, well, I was too, but that still doesn't excuse you from not doing a very good job. because I wasn't very encouraging. I was actually hoping to miss the cut. I didn't want to be there to begin with. I mean, I don't know why we were in Memphis the week before the Open, but we were. You know, he just had a sense of calmness about him and the confidence. You could just see it. And that's like I said, that went back to 98 at the Open. And then starting in 99, he came out. He had no club deal, no ball deal, no nothing, no bag deal. We had no obligation to any club company, so we played the clubs he wanted to play. We're back to a Titleist golf ball. And, you know, I mean, we lost in a playoff at Hilton Head, I think, that year. You know, won the AT&T Pebble. So he had, you know, he had a good year going into the U.S. Open already.
Do you ever get tired of getting asked questions about it? I mean, we are 13, 14 years later here.
Oh, no, you never get asked. I mean, you never get tired of asking about it. I mean, it's an honor. And in my opinion, and I'm biased, but, you know, that was, you know, in the television era, that had to be one of the most, you know, greatest Opens ever to watch on TV. And I've watched, you know, I haven't watched the whole thing. Obviously, I've watched some of it, bits and pieces of it. But, you know, it's just so exciting. Like I said, with all those name players right there and the way and the fashion that he won the tournament, you know, in the last hole with a, you know, 20-foot putt. And it was just, you know, you couldn't write a better script. And then for him to lose his life, you know, 4 months later, I mean.
Right. When you got to the golf ball on 18 in the rough, what was the discussion? Because we couldn't hear it on TV. If you go back and watch it, you can't hear what you guys are saying.
It was the worst lie all week. I mean, so what do we got? What do we got to lay up to those cross bunkers up there? He didn't even ask for front yardage. I mean, that's how bad the lie was. And, you know, from the tee, we felt the ball was actually in the fairway. And then you watch the replay, and you can see, you know, it just kind of kicked a little right. And I think he may have thinned it just a touch, you know, with his driver, and it just didn't carry far enough. But it was the worst lie all week. And Payne, you know, that was one reason he contended in U.S. Opens, is he always took his medicine. He took double bogey out of play every time. I'm not saying he never made a double, but, you know, if you look back at the history of the U.S. Open, I guarantee the guys that have won have not had more than one double bogey. You're always going to give one back, but you can't give two. And he was very good about taking his medicine, and that was, you know, there was no discussion about trying to hit that ball in the green. You know, he just wanted to know what he had, what his yardage was right to the cross bunkers.
I thought the wedge shot, the third shot, was the most patient golf shot I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
To not hit it that flag.
Yeah.
To hit it into the middle of the green. What were you guys talking about at that point? What was the target?
Well, you know, we really didn't talk about it. I mean, I knew he wasn't gonna get back there. I mean, you just got to give yourself a putt, and you know, unless Phil holds his putt, we're living to see, you know, to see another day. Even if we miss our putt. So, you know, I knew he wasn't going to get it all the way back there. I mean, he just wanted to look at it. And the way he was putting, I mean, that's all he needed as it turned out anyway, was just a look. And, you know, I mean, to the putt he had, though, I mean, you know, you could read whatever you wanted to into it. And, you know, he saw it the way it was. It was a pretty straight putt. And, you know, poured it right in there.
I've hit that putt. It breaks to the right, except for when Payne Stewart hits it.
That's right.
we're talking to Mike Hicks, who continues to caddy. You've been caddying for Spencer Levine. I talked to Spence, not on the air the other night, but I just called to see how he was doing, and he's beating himself up. Are you taking some time off now?
Well, I was, you know, he calls me Christmas Eve and says, hey, I'm not going to play this year. And I'm like, what? He says, yeah, I'm not ready. My thumb's not ready. And I actually saw him a couple of times while I was on the West Coast. And I actually talked to him yesterday, as a matter of fact, said his thumb's feeling good. But he's, you know, it's such a short compressed season this year. I think he's going to go ahead and take the whole medical and start at the Fry's, which is in, I don't know, October, which starts 2014. He's going to come back then just to make sure his thumb's healed, and and he's ready to play. But I caddied for Matt Jones, an Australian guy, for 4 weeks out there. And I had Josh Teeter last week in L.A. We missed you in L.A., by the way.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Florida for 3 weeks. I'll be at Honda Doral and Innisbrook. But, you know, that West Coast and I, it's a long way for us to go for a week.
You know, I flew home. I got home yesterday morning. I took the red eye. I could not leave there quick enough. I was so glad to get off that West Coast. I mean,
I just want to throw this out there at you. At 9:10 tomorrow morning, I have an opening on number two. Just so you know, if you'd like to come freeze with us, you're more than welcome.
Well, I'll keep that in mind. I'll see if I can clear that with my wife. I've been gone for 6 weeks, so I don't know what she's got me doing tomorrow.
I'm pretty sure that we won't see you, but certainly some other time. I live a lot closer to you than I am right now. You can come over on Thursday or Friday and play Sedgefield and make it home for dinner.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe we'll do that.
Will I see you down in Florida?
I'm working. I'm actually going to start working for Josh, starting at Tampa. He's getting married a week of Honda. So we're going to start at Tampa, and I'll go Tampa, Bay Hill, Houston, be the next three I work.
What's it like working with the younger guys? Josh has obviously been around for a few years. Great kid. Spencer's tremendously talented. By contrast of working for a guy like Payne and some of the other guys that you've worked for since then, what's it like for you to work with the younger guys?
It's a bit more, you know, it's a bit more challenging just because of the inexperience and the there's a little bit more work involved. I mean, seeing the golf courses and just a little bit more. There are a little bit more info. Things have really changed now. I mean, you know, before years ago, I mean, if you had an uphill shot, you in the practice round or, you know, playing the course over the years, you'd figure out how far uphill it played or how far downhill it played. Well, now it's, you know, they're so precise, they want to know to the yard, you know, what the shot's playing. So there's a little bit more math involved now than it was back when Payne was playing. And they're just a little bit more. They want a little bit more information than the older guys. It's just, you know, I mean, it's like everything else in golf. I mean, golf has gotten so, I don't know what the word I'm looking for. It's just, you know,
it's become a science.
Everything's designed. The ball's designed to go straight. The clubs, the shafts. Everything is more precise now in golf. The ball doesn't curve as much. So these young guys, I mean, they want precise numbers, and you know, not that the older guys don't, but it's just a little bit more. There's a little bit more information you have to for the younger guys.
You know, I was fortunate enough to play with Payne a few times. I was fortunate. I played with you guys on. You won't remember this, but I played with you guys on the Sunday. At the Hope,
mm-hmm.
The day that Duvall shot 59.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I clipped you guys by a shot, just in case you
got us by a shot there.
I chipped in on 18 for eagle to clip you guys by a shot. And I have to tell you that when I look back on my career, getting to play golf with Payne Stewart's one of the absolute highlights.
Well, I know he enjoyed you, man. I mean, I know he liked you know, a lot of people, and you were one of them. So, I mean, he enjoyed his time he spent with you for sure.
Well, it's you know what? It's still hard to talk about all these years later. I'm sure it's even harder for you. It was a great moment in time, and certainly over the next next year and change, you'll be asked about it quite a bit. You're very kind to come on and have the conversation with us tonight.
Yeah, not a problem. I enjoyed doing it.
Well, thank you, Mike. And enjoy the family. Enjoy being home.
I'm going to do it, John. I got 3 weeks at home. I'm going to enjoy every minute of it.
Well, I'm in town till next Wednesday. If we get a day of 65, I just have to be off the golf course by 3:30.
Well, we'll do it. I'll keep an eye on the weather, and you do the same, and I'll talk to you, and hopefully I can come up and play.
Yeah, absolutely. That's Mike Hicks.